Katie.
Hi, Teresa.
We're going to do this entire episode singing. It's our singing episode.
Could you imagine? We'd probably lose every single follower.
You know, like, every, like, long-running, like, sitcom or TV show, like, they always do, like, a musical episode.
Oh, my God,
imagine,
yeah.
This was ours.
Like, standard procedure. Everyone needs at least one. No, we would crash and burn.
Speak for yourself. I'm a phenomenal singer.
The most angelic of angelic voices.
You've heard me.
Totally.
Put on All Too Well 10-minute version.
I was going to say, I'm thinking post-bridal shower All Too Well to the point where this is Erica's face in the backseat when you just kept singing for almost 10 minutes. Finally, her and Tom concluded that it must come to an end.
Yeah.
And shut you down.
Well, I have a lot of haters, you guys.
You totally do. I will say, I think it's funny too. I don't think it would translate into singing if I had a voice. Because you know when you have like British or Australian singers, you don't always detect the accent. For more times than I feel they almost like translate American with the song. But I wonder with like a Jersey accent for some words, because I was at a conference this weekend and I said two words and I had people looking at me like, well, you're from the North.
I'm betting that you said something about coffee.
100% coffee was one of the words.
Yeah.
Because I need
and water, probably. Because yeah, that always gets everyone knows.
Was, and they like looked at me and I was like,
sorry.
Sorry. It's also not water.
No, it's water.
It's water.
Which, like, I get made fun of at work. I, like, work in North Jersey, and I still get made fun of at work from people because of the way that I say water. And then, like, shout out to Cousin Jimmy. Hey, Carrie. Cousin Jimmy sent me, like, a meme, and it was basically, like, making fun of the way that, like, I say it.
You're saying it right. I'm confused.
Water? Water.
Water. I don't know.
No, I know that it sounds silly. Like when I hear other people say the word that aren't from New Jersey, I'm like, oh, like I'm saying it wrong. But that's just how I say it.
But it's also not coffee.
It's coffee.
Coffee. It's like a long O, you know?
Koofy.
Anywho.
I thought that we weren't going to be able to record this week. We're obviously going to be posting a daily instead of a weekly, which I think is nice, but we're only able to do that because my flight got delayed 5 hours. So literally I should be on board a flight right now, but instead I will be boarding at 8:20. So
you should be doing that alone. I mean, not that you don't know how to travel alone at night, but like I did that when I went to Indy for work last year, and it's not fun landing so late. And then when you have a longer Uber drive or a drive.
Well, we're renting a car, and that is, we have to like take the shuttle to the car rental and then get the car and then drive like an hour and 10 minutes.
You want like a buddy at that point to like feed off of for energy purposes. Yeah. Otherwise you're like, now what?
Yeah. Cause it's like a 2 hour time difference. So by the time we like land, get the car, get to our hotel, I think we're basically looking at like 2 a.m. our time. Yeah, so I'm going to be tired. I told Gil, I'm like, you cannot sleep in the car. Like, because it's under my name, so I'm like, I'll drive. But I'm like, you better stay awake. But then I'm also like, you could just go to sleep. I'll put on like an audiobook or something.
Yeah. Kind of like you don't mind at that point when you're in the car, like just pass out, dude. I'll listen to what I want to do.
Yeah. It's going to be a long night. But anyway, so we are able to record our atmosphere episode. Surprise. If you guys were expecting this now to be a week late. It's not. It's here today, which is Thursday, I guess, for you. Anyway, Atmosphere by Taylor Jenkins Reid is her newest release. It basically follows our astronaut Joni. I'm going to call her Joni because Franny Joni. And Joni. Joan. It follows Joan mostly. This is like the 80s. I think it's like spans 4 years, like 1980 to 1984. And it's like the first time there are females in the NASA space program, as far as like astronauts go. And it's a love story.
But yes, but like I love it also brings
it's not a romance book, it's no. a love story. But
also like family dynamics, because she has like her niece from her yep. sister, which was an unexpected pregnancy in the 80s. That was a little
yeah.
not like so taboo, but a little like and then especially when it comes to like relations with others, like very taboo if you were of LGBTQ community, like
in the 80s yeah of course, especially in like a government program and like the first female, like the first women astronauts, there was like a lot riding on it,
a lot of eyes on them.
But yeah, I think like because I mean it is on the cover, it says Atmosphere, a love story. And I was like, at first I was like, oh, it's gonna be like heavy on the romance, which it's not, but I think it's like also like platonic love and like 100%. Their love for space and familial love. So like it is a love story, but it like love takes place in a lot of different ways.
Yes.
So
like love for what they're doing, like love for like the passion of like Vanessa was big on flying. That's all she wanted to do was fly. So like it's like that overarching, like it's present through all plot points.
Yeah.
Not just the relationship aspect.
Right, not just the romantic relationship aspect. But this book starts with a bang, and then you go back in time. And then in the middle, something else happens, and then you go back in time. And then at the end, it ends, like, obviously on a very positive note, but there's no epilogue. So, like, when it ends, like, you kind of can just decide for yourself what you think happens after. But let's start from the beginning before we get to the end, because I'm like still kind of distraught about what happens. And I think that Taylor Jenkins Reid, I think I'm just gonna call her TJR. I think that she, okay, so they're on a space mission. Joan is in Capcom. So she's like the person who's talking to the spaceship. She's like she's Houston, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Vanessa is up. It's her first time in space. Joan had gone like a month prior. And so it's Lydia, Vanessa, Griff, Steve, and Hank are all up on this mission. And they, I think, are just like deploying a satellite. And Vanessa and Griff go. Yeah, very routine. They've done it before. Whatever. Vanessa and Griff are on the team that I think is like, they're like, they go outside, they do something, whatever, they come back in, and then Lydia, Steve, and Hank are supposed to, like, deploy, I guess, the satellite, and it just, like, breaks my heart. Griff is like, let's leave the hatch open so that we can watch it deploy, and they're like, yeah, like, that's fine. Anyway, they, like, set off the satellite explodes, a large piece of shrapnel hits Griff, and, like, he's like internally bleeding. A piece hits the ship, and long story short, Steve and Hank dead. Lydia close to death. Griff close to death. Griff eventually dies. And throughout the book, it's like mentioned, like if something goes wrong on a mission, it'll be like, oh, this mission failed because like Lydia and Vanessa, like I think the reason why the three men died and not Lydia and not Vanessa was like kind of to further the point of a space mission or anything can fail for whatever reason. It didn't fail because it was women. Like, I think that to me, like, that's why she went that route with killing off like those three men versus Lydia versus Griff. I just feel like that was kind of like a big theme was like, I feel like that's like Lydia says it a bunch of times like throughout the book. Like, there's so much more riding on it because if anything goes wrong, it's going to be like, well, that's why we shouldn't send women to space, even if it has nothing to do with what any of them are doing.
I mean, sure, Griff getting injured was 100% at the fault of the fact that they kept the door open. If he was behind the door, sure, he still could have potentially passed, but the direct hit of the shrapnel was because he left the door open. And to Lydia's point, too, and what you're saying, it does make sense because even throughout the book, when you get to, we don't really know a lot about Lydia, like low-key wish there was like some spinoffs here so we can get like their own personal little something something. But yeah. Lydia's a bull. Like, she kind of is almost like, I don't really care who I trample over because I'm going to know everything. I'm going to do everything I possibly can because I'm getting into space and I'm doing it.
Yeah.
And she's explicitly says, as a female, we have everything to lose.
Yeah.
And so much to gain. So, like, I'm going to do everything I possibly can because I have to be the best. And I'll stomp on you if I have to get to the top.
Yeah. And she says something at some point. She's like, I feel like, because she's getting mad that, like, maybe, like, Donna's not taking it as seriously because Donna and Tank, right?
Mother.
Yeah, like, and yeah, whatever. And she, like, makes a comment. She's like, I feel like I have to be smarter or stronger or, like, put more hours in.
Better.
All this stuff. Yeah, better, basically, in every aspect. Because if anything goes wrong, like, then it's harder for them to blame me. If, like, I still, like, prove. So, like, she can't really connect with the other women in this program because she's, like, they aren't taking it as seriously as me. I think Lydia's, like, really funny.
And at the end of the day, like, that's – and if you – I mean, if you're listening to this and you haven't read it, all these women are exceptional. Mm-hmm. Like, they're doing everything they're supposed to. But unlike Lydia, whose world seems to revolve around this and only this – Donna is establishing a relationship for herself and expanding her family. You have Vanessa and Joan navigating their relationship, but Joan also navigating her sister and her parents and her own. Mm-hmm. Like, she's you're on Joan's self-discovery track along with the story. She knows she's a little different. She just can't pinpoint what. And with the help of, I would honestly even say more so, Vanessa. But her team can kind of pick up on some signals as well, whether she wants to acknowledge it or believe it or not. Kind of like the whole Griff aspect, like her and Griff is interested in Joan. And he expresses that.
Griff, like, loves Joan.
And she tries to reciprocate. There is a kiss. There's a kiss more so out of, I don't want to say spite, but, like, Joan's just like, F it, I'm going to just do this. Like, he's a nice guy. This should be.
And she's
like that mentality, she's like, this is what I should be doing. And
She doesn't, it's not like Joan's like, oh, I think I like women throughout the whole book. She's very just like, I don't know really what's wrong with me. I think I'm a little bit different. And then
she's
not feeling an attraction to Vanessa. And then they're in New Orleans and they're drinking and they go to a strip club, which, like, if you've ever been to New Orleans, I think, like, every place is a strip club, honestly, if you try hard enough. I've saw so many.
Yes.
Anyway. And she, like, finds one of the women who, like, kind of resembles Vanessa, very attractive. And she's, like, kind of like, oh my God, like, taken aback by, like, her attraction. And that's when she kisses Griff. And then she's like, this is not it.
Yeah.
And then Griff is, like, heartbroken, but he's like, it's okay, I'll get over it. He's just, like, such a good guy that, like, when he died, I was like, why?
Yeah. And, like, he even kind of insinuates, like, I understand this is hard to navigate. Like, your secret's safe with me. And Joan's like, kind of like, what secret? And he's like, cute. Like, you don't know it yet, or you're not admitting it yet. But even if she was assured that this is what she wants for herself, you can't just outwardly say it to anybody because
no,
especially with, like, the program being so new, everything's kind of on the hush, and she doesn't feel comfortable enough to turn to her parents or her sister.
No, God forbid.
We will talk about Barbara in a bit. That bitch.
You know, there's gonna be a lot to say about Barbara. God, I hope she's dead somewhere. What a bitch.
If not, I'm coming with you for a shovel, you ignoramus. You're I have a lot of choice words for Barbara. But it's just so, like, I feel like when they're away together and they're going through everything, like, it's almost a found family without being a found family. Like, they're all close and connected. Mm-hmm. But because she's harboring the secret, I think she has a hard time fully allowing herself to be accepted and accept these people in her life. And I can't relate, but it you feel it. Like, it hurts you. Like,
it hurts,
Even to this day, like, people have to do that for one reason or another. And that's just...
I know, because that part...
It's so sad.
It's so sad, because part of me, like, I, like, almost sometimes, like, was forgetting it. I'm like, oh, this is the 80s, and it's, the 80s.
Yeah, reality check.
And I was like, no, like, you guys should just be together and be out and proud. And then I was like, oh, it's the 80s. And also, like, that's still difficult today. So, like, but they have to, like, keep their relationship super private. I feel like once they finally, like, got together, like, it was so obvious to the reader. that Vanessa like really snitching. Likes Joan.
Yes.
And when Joan finally realizes like what her feelings like truly mean, like it's just like neither of them can really believe that the other person like is into them. And it starts off like pretty like kind of like mostly physical, like I feel like at first.
Yeah.
Because they're just like kind of like sneaking time like with each other. And this is not a spicy book whatsoever. So if you're looking for spice, which like that's not the point of the story.
No, it's not the point.
Like not the point whatsoever. So there's absolutely none in this. There's like alluding. It's very like they're alluding to things happening, but like you don't get it, which is great. I forgot like where my point was going. Oh, but like I forget his name, but like the head of, I guess like NASA or whoever is like the head of like, it's like Antonio. Oh, I think it is Antonio actually.
I was going to say, I feel like it's like I think it might be like an Italian, like some kind of.
Yeah, no, I think it is Antonio. So I think it's when he calls Joan in to say like, hey, you're going to be going up. And then she like expresses, I think she goes up, she comes down, she wants to do Capcom. And then at that point, he like kind of says something to her. And one of the other astronauts, Jack, kind of like makes a comment to Joan at one of the barbecues that they're all at. And Joan kind of just like, she like does it, like she kind of like brushes it off. And she realizes that like they think that they're not being obvious. Like at this point, they've been together for like 3 years.
Yes.
And they think they're not being obvious, but everyone else at this point is definitely picking up on them.
Yeah.
And so I guess we think that Jack says something to Antonio about it. And Antonio's like, hey, like, I literally do not care kind of like what you do behind closed doors, but your personal life does reflect on our program here. So we cannot be like, basically he's like, you can't do that. Or like, you're kind of out. And Joan knows that this is like Vanessa's dream. And then Vanessa desperately wants to be able to fly one of the shuttles. But there's like all these like rules, like even though she's like a pilot and been a pilot for a year, she wasn't like a Navy pilot. So she's technically not supposed to be driving the shuttle. There's like a whole, you know, it's the government. So there's like red tape everywhere. Anyway, Joan doesn't want Vanessa to like lose her chance to go up. She's like, there's 4 weeks until she goes up. It's this whole thing. Joan basically tries to break up with her. And it lasts like 3 minutes. But like that whole scene was like so sad to read.
Yes. Again.
Especially knowing like what's happening in space, that like Vanessa's now by herself. And like, so going back and like reading like what happened, I was like, oh my God, like I really thought that they weren't gonna make up before the mission. And I was like, no.
No, same. I thought like, oh my God, they broke up and she's freaking in space with, you don't know what the outcome is going to be. I think it's sad for so many reasons, right? One, we just pointed out, it's just so sad that you can't be together because it's not a quote unquote norm. One. Two, it's just the way she writes it, you are in that kitchen where it starts, but like you are the person, like you're in it. You are embodied by Joan and you are, or Vanessa, and you're flopping back and forth as like the dialogue goes on. But I freaking love that Vanessa gets across the street and she's like, I'm not doing this. Like you got to speak, you got to say your part. Yeah. And like, now it's my turn. Like Joan tries to interrupt her and she's like, basically like, shut up. And just shoots back at her. She's like, I won't allow this to happen.
Yeah.
And I'm like, fuck yes, girl. Like, I love a I love a reverse third act breakup, if you will.
There was like no breakup. I like, just like, my heart was like breaking. My heart was breaking for Vanessa when Joan, because like Joan was like trying to kind of be like a little mean to like get her to leave. But yeah, no, I love when Vanessa was like, actually, you know what? Fuck that. She goes to the payphone across the street and she's like, I'm not leaving.
Yeah, like, nice try. Now, can you open the door? Because I'm coming back in. But I also love, too, like, she was kind of, Vanessa was so hesitant to meet Francis in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the minute they start interacting, it's like, almost like, screw Joan, you're my best friend. Yeah. Let's go get milkshakes together. This is what you need to do. But, like, and I know she knew that Francis was Joan's world, but I think also kind of seeing it sometimes, like the minute you get two people together and you see how their interactions are, you realize like what kind of a level that love is on, or whatever it is that you're looking at. And like, Frances. When she, I knew Barbara was going to be a fucking piece of shit the whole time.
But like, I was like, I wanted her to do better. Because like she had moments where I was like, oh, okay. Like she's starting to get it.
Or like just kind of like glimpses of good in her. Like when she calls her sister, like, you should apply for this program. Like there is good embedded in her. I think she's just, I don't want to say a follower because that's not the term I'm looking for.
She's like a narcissist.
Yeah, that, well, 100% that.
But very self-absorbed.
Just, like, she definitely probably has her own opinions, but she's so worried about, and I get it. I couldn't imagine as a single parent, what, even in the 80s, like what the cost of everything might be. Women in the 80s really didn't have educations past maybe high school. It just really, it depended. It varied.
Yeah.
And that was the norm. And to provide for not only yourself, but a child and everything else, I couldn't imagine the struggles. But I think in her mind, like, she just became so skewed and so focused on the monetary aspect of everything. And then the lifestyle of what she wanted, that she, I feel like in the end, she almost was acting like, well, I was a mom. I did what I need to do. Now I get to live my life.
Yeah.
And this man is giving me everything I want. And now you've become a burden. And I just don't have the time for you anymore.
Yeah.
And that's just like, when Frances A was left out on the front porch and locked out of her own house for Joan to pick her up. And Joan's what, like 10, 15 minutes late? But like,
yeah, that's bad. Still.
And then the fact that like she had to lie to her niece, like, yeah, you're going to have fun at boarding school, but you can't even step in because you're not a parent.
No, and then being left at boarding school on Thanksgiving. Oh, she's going to have a turkey club sandwich.
Yeah. If I could like reach through a book and put the most amount of pressure on her fucking jugular, I would. That little hoe. Maybe smack her head into the wall a few times for good measure. But the fact that like, and again, like Joan is so reserved because she, A, again, not a parent or guardian, but like, when she finally was like, sign this fucking piece of paper, I'm getting her. And yeah, I don't care what you want to say to me and how evil you are. Like, I'm picking her up and she's mine. Like, it was a very Matilda moment when Miss Honey adopts Matilda.
I was going to say, like, that's why I feel like there was like also like such themes of like parenting and like motherhood in this. Because like, obviously Joan is Franny's aunt, but Joan is like more a mother to her than her biological mother is. And there's like all these different like forms of motherhood. And then even with Vanessa like kind of stepping in, not as like a parent, but Vanessa was giving me more aunt vibes to Frances than aunt. Joan is like very much like another parent to her. Honestly, what the relationship with between Joan, Barbara, and Frances felt like, it felt like divorced parents. Like, it felt like Joan was like more of like the male role, and not because like she like took on like that, but I think it was more like, oh, during the week you're with your mom and you're going to school and blah blah blah, and on the weekend you get to hang out with, like, I feel like they had like split custody.
And even though I think Joan would have stepped up to that by choice, I feel like it was also more of like the vibe that I got from bitchy fucking Barbara was she never wanted to be a parent but had the baby.
She did not want to be a parent.
So
not for a day in her life.
No. So like she, again, I'm saying,
I think she resented Frances for just like being born as if it was Franny's fault for being conceived.
Correct. And again, like forcing is a terrible word. She didn't force Joan to do this because Joan wants to do this. But like, basically, even if Joan had a choice, Barbara was like, no, you're going to split these duties with me.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, when
Joan gets accepted and like is moving to be closer to, I guess, NASA headquarters, Barbara's like, well, what does that mean for us? Like, did you think about us when you were making this decision? Like all these things. And it's like, why does Joan have to give up her life because of a decision that you made? And then when it comes down to it, like, you think that you deserve to have whatever kind of life you want, and you don't care how that affects anybody else, including your kid. Like, Barbara literally is such a menace. I hate her.
No, she's awful. Like, if someone gave her the opportunity early on to take Frances from her, she would have taken it.
Yeah.
She would have taken the out.
Yeah.
And like, she's not, like, she tries to show appreciation, but it's more to throw it in Joan's face than anything.
Yep.
I just, like, she's a fucking piece of shit. That's the only way you can describe that woman. Is she's a fucking piece of shit.
She's literally a terrible person.
Fucking hole. That's all I have to say.
And since we're on the topic of parenting, because like the maybe the one of the saddest parts of this book, they're all out. Donna and Hank get married and they have a baby. And the baby, I think, is like 6 months old when Hank goes up into space and dies. It's like really, really like so sad. And they're all out at a bar one night. And Donna's talking. I think she's talking. I don't know. She's talking to Joan or Vanessa. It doesn't matter. But she basically says that if either her or Hank has to die, she hopes it's her. Because like he was just like made to be a dad. Like he just is a spectacular parent. He like loves his daughter so fiercely. And she's like, I love my daughter to the world, like to the ends of the earth. But like Hank was made to be a parent. So like if I had to choose to someone, I would choose me to die. Like this is like he was made for this. And then you find out that he doesn't make it.
And she's so, like this is all unfurling for her.
Okay, and she's watching this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
she's there. Like she's watching all this happen. She knows that her husband just died. But we're going back in time with her saying this, I think when the baby's maybe like 2 to 3 months old, and then you find out like in present day, like he's dead. And I just like, that to me, I was like, no. Why? Why would you write that?
Crushed my fucking soul. TJR was sitting there going, I'm gonna fucking make people weep. And yeah. Wrote that.
Yeah.
Harder than any time that they've probably wept in a book in a while, at least for me, because I don't read that emotional of reads. But like, fuck.
I just, yeah, no, there's like, okay, wait. I literally have the book open, and this is not to that part, but Vanessa, this is like, she tries to think about what Donna must be going through right now. She tries not to think of the baby and the fact that Thea will never remember the way Hank held her on Thanksgiving and the way Donna kept asking to take her and Hank always shook his head no. She'd heard Hank say, please don't let me have her. Thea will never remember the way it felt to be in her father's arms like that. Her father will be someone people tell Thea about. And then Vanessa, she can't stand to think of it. She instead thinks of it, and then she like is like trying to save Griff and Lydia. But like she stops and like thinks like, this poor baby is like never gonna know her father's love and like how much he loved her. I'm like, why would you write this, Taylor?
Why would you write this?
Why would you write this?
Like, I could cry now.
No, I know. Like, it's literally like it's so sad. Like, I've never been like, oh, I wish one of the women would have died, and like one of like, why couldn't Hank have lived? Like, I would have killed Lydia.
Same. Real quick.
No, yeah, like, it's really bad. Like, I'm just like this. Even no offense to Joan and Vanessa, I probably wouldn't have even killed Vanessa. I'm like, this man's a parent who like loves his daughter. Like he deserves to live.
100%. Like if someone's got to go, your drama straw. Hank's living.
And then, yeah, and like we didn't connect with Steve as closely, but Steve also dies. He's the one who's like taking Vanessa and Joan. He's like really showing an interest in them and like getting them on the planes. Like he's kind of mentoring them. Vanessa looks up to him like as a mentor, she says like he's kind of like an older brother. Like.
Yeah.
Vanessa like truly deeply loves him. He has a wife, he has kids, like he's the one who's like having the barbecues and like getting like the group together. He's kind of like the leader of the pack in a way. And I'm like, she's up and like he, and then he dies. And I'm like, oh my God, like why are all these like all the good ones are dying? Like why couldn't this happen on Joan? I didn't care about any of the guys on Joan's fucking mission. Like
what about no one?
I know, which okay, that's obviously the point of the book. You.
Well, you know, I have a couple of people. Like, Frances, too. Frances was going to be safe for everything. Frances is holding up that fucking cunt of a mother. But, like, oh, my God.
No, but, like,
this is so messed up to say. It's not. Say but it. It is. Like, I was still sad. But I think the Hank, that quote alone impacted me more than when there was radio. Because then Vanessa's like, I don't get, basically announcing to the whole, all Houston and anyone in the room with Houston. I don't give a fuck if you need to fire me, arrest me, like whatever. I have one life on this board aside for myself. Mm-hmm. I'm doing this. Like I'm bringing Lydia home and we're going to try to save her.
Yeah.
So, like you do whatever you need to do to me. For me, I need to do this.
Yeah.
And when there's like radio silence, like don't get me wrong, it is sad. Because now Joan's listening to like the fact that like she just lost the love of her life.
Yeah.
And someone very important now in France's life. But I'm like, but Hank.
No, I know. I was really distraught about Hank. And like, it's funny because like they make you care about this like random character that you don't get that much interaction with. Like, he's always around, you know, he's a really great guy, but he's like a side character. But just like those like little snips, I was just like, I need this man to survive. Like,
and like maybe at like an, if I read this book when I was like 16 to my early 20s, it would impact you because I think it's a very sad moment mm-hmm. that you can understand. But I feel like as you get older, I hate saying that about us, but like not that we're old, but like we're older. Yeah. I think you could start to appreciate like the dad could be someone we know, right? Like we're now in that mindset, in that thick of it with like we see our friends and our families like expanding. Like, so I feel like things just hit very different when they become a bit more relatable. So like in those moments, I could feel what TJR was writing about Hank. Like, because like even now, like, think about like Leah, like she's two. She might remember like glimpses if I were to go, but like when she turns to be like in her teens, she's not going to remember me. Like she's like, and that's being two even like, so a sick, like again, Liam's 10 months. Like,
yeah, it's very unfortunate. This
woman? Like she's not going to remember anything. Like, so a 6 month old baby, like they're not going to even remember. They're not going to be able to look at you like, or like think back and be like, I can see their face. There's nothing.
No. Yeah.
Fucking tragic.
It's just like all through stories that other people tell you.
Yeah, that's all you're going to have.
Which is like really sad. No, there's like the book, there are really sad things and like very complex things that are happening when we're in like the flashbacks. But like, I just like everything that happens on that spaceship. And I feel like we're not, I mean, like it's the beginning, it's the middle, and it's the end. Everything that happens there is so so traumatic and like, I feel like it just proves like how great of a writer TJR is, because she's like evoking like anxiety. Like I'm like, I'm anxious the whole time. I'm like right up there like with Vanessa trying to figure this out. Like when Griff dies and they have to like kind of like tell her and they're like talking about it, she's like, they're trying not to tell her. They're like, we can't tell her.
They don't tell her at first. Yeah.
Yeah. And then Joan like looks and she's like, I have to tell her. And like, I think the part is like, it's explained that like Vanessa is like, she basically says like, she just doesn't remember them even like telling her, because she just like, she hears it and she like completely like blacks out. And then like later on, she like comes back to her and like waves, like when they're like, oh, his temperature's dropped. Like then she like starts to remember like what it was like. I did find the Donna quote.
I don't know if I want to hear it.
No. I'm gonna read it. It's like literally right here. I wasn't even looking for it. Donna once told her that if one of them had to die between her and Hank, she hoped it would be her. Vanessa didn't believe her, but Donna insisted. And then it's a quote from Donna and says, it's not for some stupid ass reason like I can't live without him. Donna said, I can. I did for 30 years before I met the son of a bitch. It's because he's the better parent. He loves our baby more. I know you can't compare love, but I love her so much and he loves her even more. And he's dead. So I just wanted you guys to just, you know, get on board with that. Because I have to know that, so now you do.
But it's true. Like, if you really think about it, when they're in space, there's obviously time elapsing. But I feel like when there's flashbacks and then, like, to come present, the present really takes up more of that timeline in the story. Yeah. Like, right? Like, you're getting more, but we are living in the past most of the story.
Yeah.
And then the flashbacks to the front. If you really think about it, it's probably all not that long in space. Like, I mean, I'm no space guru here, but I can't imagine it being more than like a handful of hours that this is going down.
Yeah. No, I'm
that's such a short time to be in the present. And so it's like the fact that she kind of, to your point of how amazing a writer she is, if you're only getting a few hours in space in the present time, the fact that she can instill that anxiety in you, just that much.
And you're finding out you're finding out that they're dead too pretty early on. And then she's still making you care about them throughout the rest of the book.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was like,
this is rude. I was like hoping, like, so I'm like, oh, maybe Griff's like not that great of a, I was like literally like maybe he's something happens amazing. And like he's not a good, no, yeah, they're all just like really good people. But I liked at the end too, like, so when Joan is on and she's Houston and like they're like Houston navigator back and forth. And then I think it's like even Jack who kind of gives Joan the go ahead, like, you can talk to her as Vanessa, yeah, like you can like say what you need to say. And they both kind of at that point know that like they are not going to have jobs most likely in the program after, but Jack is like, do it, like tell her how, like tell her,
like he literally is like, I'm on board with you girls, like you, yeah, do whatever, he's like, the F you need.
Yeah, he kind of gives them like, he gives like the head nod, he's like, yep, like say what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And then you have the anxiety at the end when like it lands and like they're not hearing anything and like Joan is like literally about to die, and then Vanessa gets on and she's like, Joan,
basically Joan. But like, and it's up to you now to distinguish, like, does Lydia live? Which, no offense to Lydia, I kind of don't care. Like, I care.
I know.
But like, I feel like, yeah, it's, she, I feel bad for her. She almost gets, for the girl that just wants to be picked, I feel like she almost gets overshadowed in the end because you're reeling from everything you just learned and, yeah, found out and like the stress you're feeling.
But she's the one who saved the ship.
She is the one who saved the ship. So at the end of the day, two women, two badass women did it.
Yeah.
Whether one lives or not, like, she still was the one who got everything to,
yeah,
like, she found, like, the hole.
Yeah. And we know she's alive when they land. But literally, yes, the ending is, Houston, this is Navigator. Lydia Danes is alive. I'm about to land at Edwards. Navigator, we read you. And then Vanessa says hi. Joan says hi. And, like, the book ends.
Yeah.
So, like, that's it. And I was like, I flipped. I'm like, and then just went right into the author's note. And I was like, babe, you're not going to give us a little epilogue? Like, 20 years later. And, like, they got to still work at NASA or something. Like, yeah, we have no idea.
Or, like, give us a Francis update. And then, like, in the future with, like, you see them in the, like,
yeah,
I don't know, anything. But, like, I would have to assume Francis is living her best life because now that she's with her aunt, like, Joan and Vanessa are going to live happily ever after. I would, yeah, just, I would hope that NASA, my thought process is, this would make national news, right? Like,
I mean, yeah, people were watching this, like, yes, as it was going down, like, back, so, in the day.
If that's the case, I can't see why the female pilot and Lydia wouldn't have a job jeopardy, like, her job would not, no, be on the line. But I would assume she'd also advocate on behalf of Vanessa and Joan, with the backing of the one guy. Like, I feel like they would have job safety after that.
Yeah.
You can't piss off the public sometimes.
Yeah. There's so many good Donna moments, like, now that I'm, like, flipping through.
Donna was a cool bitch. Like, I want to do some, but she's like, I'm living my best life, like, having, like, hanging with Hank, getting it going. Yeah. Like, she was very willing to put her career on the line.
Yeah, like, so they're, like, all talking, yes, and Vanessa says something, like, you should be more scared of what's going to happen to you and Hank, the gorgeous, miserable bomb that's going to blow up in your life, whatever. And Donna's like, I'm not scared of that. I'm scared of what NASA and everybody else in the world is going to try to tell me I can't do once I'm a mother. How can you leave your child at home while you're in space, even though fathers have been doing it for, over 2 decades? And then, should mothers even be in space? Who takes care of your child when you're at work? Like, why is it okay for man to do it? That's why, like, I'm like, Donna, this, I just feel like this was just, like, such, like, a great story, amazing characters, amazing plot, like, amazing writing, all that. But it was also just, like, a story about, like, some badass females.
Sometimes we need that. I'm not gonna lie. And
I think that Taylor Jenkins Reid writes a lot, like, a lot of her books are like that. I mean, I did not read Carrie Soto is Back because
he's a badass fucking bitch.
I hated Malibu Rising. I know that. I think that that's unpopular. So when Carrie Soto is Back, I was just like, I can't read it. Like, Malibu Rising just, like, put a bad taste in my mouth. Now I do want to go back and read Carrie Soto. But
her audio, everything that she's done so well.
Yeah, like, everything that she's ever written that I've read, even, like, her romance books, like, they're all so good.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just, like, 5 stars.
But, like, now I need more. This was one of those books where, like, I mean, I hit pause on my audiobook, but you close the page, right? Yeah. And you're just like, you're not well for a while. It was almost, dare I say.
I waited like 2 days to start another book.
I couldn't really move forward.
You have to like sit with it and really think about it.
I needed to marinate with it. And I went in a different direction afterwards. So, like, you would need like a genre shift, if you will. Like, I went to like a mystery.
Yeah.
I don't even think I would want to dabble back into like a romance, because this does have an overarching effect of like love. So I feel like I would have need to have gone like fantasy or mystery, like something. I don't know. I will say I had the book hangovers of all book hangovers from this book. And then I did the Thrashers.
Mm.
Also fucking incredible. So like, that's when you sit for a minute and you're like, what did I just do to myself? Like,
yeah.
Nothing's going to honestly compare. Like, I had a really, excuse me, hard time like trying to get back into reading after those two.
Yeah.
Because I didn't, I was, you know, me.
But yeah, 5 stars. I read, you did the audio. I started on the audio and like, I just like couldn't like pay attention to it. And it's Julia Whalen. And then there's another narrator and I'm completely blanking on her name, but the audio was done well. I was just like, not.
I think sometimes it's just how you're connecting to it, or maybe even like what you're doing. Cause the same thing was with, what did I do? What did I start on audio? Then I flipped to a book. Oh my God.
Bear Town.
Thank you. And like, I ended up listening to like the last couple chapters and I was like, maybe my brain needed to kickstart it with the book first. Like sometimes I feel like that's what has to happen. But because Julia Whalen, I think, is terrific. So yeah, I liked the audio. I was able to connect. But that also could have been because I was like maybe in the car or running, and that's just kind of, I was literally zoned into that and only that. I don't know. It's a few different people. It's Kristen DiMercutio, Julia Whalen. Oh, and Julia Whalen. Yes, only one. It says it has TJR in it. I'm like, oh, that's weird.
Because she does like the author's note in the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I couldn't recommend this more. I just think it was fantastic, to be honest.
I think it's like one a classic. Of the books that I want to go buy for people to read immediately because it was that fucking good. But yeah,
there's just like so many like good like little like, I don't know, there's just like so many like good little lines, and like it was just really good.
I mean, obviously Daisy Jones and the Six is a TV show. I feel like Seven Husbands and this could 100% be made. Like, this I could see more movie.
Yeah.
Seven Husbands I could see more as like almost like a documentary, right? Like,
yeah.
I feel like her books kind of to the point of like everything shouldn't be a movie or translate. But like, I think her books could translate well if they were, from what I've read, even like a Carrie Soto thing, I could easily see that being a documentary.
Yeah, I agree. I know that we were just like shitting on like adaptations last week, but I could definitely see this be adapted, and I think it could be adapted really, really well. I do think it would be, it would either have to be like, I feel like it could be like a 5-episode like series or just like a movie. I think it would be really well.
Yeah. It's so, but she has that kind of way of writing. So funny. Literally just shitting on it because everything doesn't need to do this. But
no, yeah, everything doesn't need to. But when we really like something, then we want it.
Yes, exactly. But this, I would be like, let's do it.
Yeah, I could see that happening too, because I know that a few of her other books have been picked up or at least optioned to become shows and movies. So yeah, like we said, 5 stars for each of us. Next week we will be reviewing the first half of the year, our favorite books.
Yes.
And I know that Katie and I talked offline about our July, and now I'm like blanking, so I'm going to put that together.
We actually have it.
Just stay tuned. We'll probably post our July schedule next week on Instagram. And other than that, I have nothing else. I have to go finish packing and I have to upload this. So on that note, Katie Jean, can you please?
I'm writing on my calendar that I need to prep my list for next week.
Prep your list, because I know next week she'll be like, what are we doing today? And I'm like, oh, we're doing this. And she's like, oh. And then Katie will just like have Goodreads up like the whole time. Like,
Yep. And Teresa will be killing with her eyes. So I will come prepared.
Good girl.
Boom. Thanks. On that note. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe to receive notifications anytime a new episode drops.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at thebff.bookclub. If you have any comments, questions, book recommendations, or books you want us to talk about in future episodes, please send us an email at thebff.bookclub1@gmail.com.
We appreciate your support.
See you, fuckers.